A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello and welcome back. So we're going to talk transfers now. Josh, I'm going to start with you on this one. As a bare minimum, this week, how many players do Liverpool need to sign to put us in a very good position to challenge?
To actually challenge for the title?
Yeah,
at least two. I think you need another centre mid. I know the line has been like a multifunctional player, but I would still like someone who leans a little bit towards the defensive side of the game. Personally, like I've seen links with Gravenberch, for example. I think I'm not overly sure he does that. I think if anything, he would lean towards being a bit more of an expressive player who's attack minded and wants to play and all that. I think we need a few more players who are interested in what happens when we lose the ball and want to do the dirty work and carry the piano, basically. So I would like a midfielder along those lines, and I think we need a centre-half as well. Ideally one who's left-footed, but considering like Kanate's injured again, Matip will probably be able to do three of those shifts where he's covering that much ground and he'll pull a hamstring or something. So I think we need a right-sided centre-half as well, really. So, but any kind of centre-half, really, for me, would be a massive benefit, I think, going into the rest of the season. But for me, it's two, I think, yeah.
Andy, what about you, mate?
Yeah, I think I agree, at least two. I've no doubt that, our first 11, if it stays fit and we have that kind of fairy tale season, like we have in 13-14, where there are no injuries, more or less, that they can do that. Van Dijk and Kanate can be a title-winning centre-half partnership for me. But as Josh says, Kanate's injured again. We know what his injury record's like. And one thing that we didn't really mention in part one was the performances of Matip and Gomez. You both played very well yesterday. But again, game situation. When else are they going to come into a situation where their back's against the wall and it's okay to just sort of sit in? We need our centre-half next to Van Dijk to be able to be comfortable going out to right-back and engaging and going one-on-one and having that pace to play the high line. And I'm just not sure Matip and Gomez, the way we usually play, are capable of doing it anymore. So I definitely think we need another one there. And I agree with Josh, another midfielder, absolutely. I don't mind, really, actually, if it's a six or an eight, or if it's defensive-minded or attacking-minded, because you could sign another eight and say, right, by Cedic, Thiago and Endo are your options at six. And you're taking a bit of a risk there in terms of how Bajcetic develops and he keeps on that upward trajectory. But, I would have no issue with a Gravenberch. I think that's, from what I've seen of him, albeit it was a couple of years ago, and he does seem to have had a bit of a downward spiral in his career. Hopefully you can just find that sweet spot where you can revive him. And, yeah, at least two. But, I think there's going to have to be surgery in defensively next summer anyway. You're probably going to have to do another one or two there. So,
Dan, me and you have constantly heard and spoken to so many people over the course of the last 3 months about centre-halves, and we've always sat there with a perplexed look on our face when the right-sided centre-back was preferenced over the left-sided centre-back. Mm-hmm. Everyone seems to have swung now to left-sided centre-back.
They do, and finally, I've never understood the right-sided centre-back. I do. We spoke about this morning, and when we kind of said a little while ago it was a 50-50 split, really, amongst the fan base about people wanting a left or a right, I never got that. For me, it was a left was a no-brainer throughout the entire time. Left-sided centre-back, left-footed centre-back. Ideally, one that can play left-back and on the left-hand side of a two, of course. That has to be the priority, and it remains the case, of course, for me. And I think the right-sided one, and the point Josh makes, is right in terms of Kanate is the standard setter when it comes to that role. Certainly when we play the new system where Trent goes into midfield, nobody can do it like him. The problem is, of course, his injury record. I don't think he's put 10 games together for us yet, which is a huge problem in itself. And the backups to him are Matip and Gomez. But you can get through with those three in my opinion. That's okay. It's probably more of a case of, like Andy alludes to, you can't do everything all in one window. It'd be nice to, but it's almost impossible to. We're finding that out now the hard way, of course. I think that is something you can kick down the line. For me, the left-sided one isn't, because we're only, I mean, we might be facing that reality now. With Virgil van Dijk suspended for the next game already, we're kind of scratching around for who's the ideal man to come and do that job. If we sign one, he's there, he's through the door. Now, that player, the left-sided centre-back, doesn't have to be someone who starts week in, week out, because you've got Virgil van Dijk, you've got Andy Robertson for the left-back, but you want someone who can drop into that role. Now, so much of this conversation remains based on what system Liverpool are going to play moving forwards. Now, again, yesterday, for the third time this season, we haven't seen us be able to incorporate our best system, which has meant some of our best weapons, Szoboszlai, McAllister, haven't been able to play their natural role. But most importantly, Trent hasn't been able to go into midfield and do that type of thing. Because when he does that, you know, Robertson becomes a left-sided centre-back. Now, I'm yet to have a conversation with somebody who tells me that Robertson is naturally a left-sided centre-back, because he just isn't. Therefore, for me, still, I come back to the point, and again, that's why it's always baffled me that anybody in their right mind would say we need the right-sided one. You need to sign the left-sided one, because that's what Andy Robertson then becomes, and you surely want a more natural fit there. He's not 6'1", he's not 6'2", he's not a left-sided centre-back. I don't see a world whereby we can move forwards with that, personally. I love Andy Robertson, but his attributes aren't best suited to being that guy. The best off suit is similar to Nunes, in a sense, moving forwards, doing stuff in the final third, getting up and down that left-hand side, not being, I'll sit here, you go and do that stuff. That doesn't suit him.
Josh?
I completely agree, yeah. I think it's interesting how we've just let so many of these left-footed centre-halves move, though, this summer, without kind of getting involved. Like, I've been watching a bit of Spurs so far this season, and watching Mickey van der Ven.
Who we were linked with.
Yeah, who we were linked with. I think it's been really interesting just to watch him and see how differently he interprets that role compared to Robertson, because he is proper less is more, you know, black boots, passing the ball to the man next to him. Passing the ball to the man next to him, doing the dirty work and then giving the ball to Son and saying, you go and win us the game. And Robertson is still at least 50% in that mould of Liverpool's creator, and Liverpool, you know, he's still trying Hollywood passes, and it's impacting how frantic Liverpool's game is. Klopp's touched on that a few times so far in his presses about, like, Liverpool being a bit too harried with the ball, a bit too rushed, need to relax, need to put our foot on it. And I think it'd help if our left-back / left-sided centre-half was just a bit less Hollywood, a bit more like, you know, less is more. And any centre-half really would be that, yeah, in comparison to the high-flying fullback that is Robertson and his nature over the past couple of years. So I agree, I think we need that kind of player, but whether we're going to get that, I still think Klopp in his head is thinking midfield. And with the window set to close in a couple of days now, I think it's ambitious to think that we're going to get two. Hopefully we will, but
I mean, the Cecconate rumours are persisting. Andy, would he be a player that you are comfortable with? And do you think Liverpool are really going to spend 60 or 70 million on him?
Is it Doucouré, the Palace lad? Yeah.
Did I say Canate then?
I think so, yeah. I was just wondering if it was a genuinely...
I think I might have typed it as well, to be honest with you. I'm pretty certain I did, yeah.
Yeah. I was wondering, I thought you'd ask me a player I'd never heard of. I have to be honest, you know, and I don't watch that much of Crystal Palace. Nothing's really particularly wowed me about him. I could be completely wrong. And, you know, I think your point, Josh, about the piano carrier, the player that comes in doesn't have to wow us. He's just someone who can sort of get it and give it, and a bit less is more, as you say, and give it to your Szoboszlais and your McAllisters and your magic men up front. But, you know, I'm not averse to getting somebody like that in, but it's nobody else has really been linked to him, have they? And, you know, at that price, I think, because they know we have the money, because it's late in the window, because they can't replace him, I'm not sure it's something I'd be particularly buzzing about, but it's probably better than, well, it is better than nothing. It would be better.
There is a lot of people, like Chloe definitely is someone who's really high on Doucouré, isn't she, Dan? Mm-hmm. I mean, she really wants to see us sign him. I think Gravenberch is probably the one where I can put on me Liverpool owner's hat on, imagine it more.
Yeah.
Perceived value in the transfer market. Sorry to say those horrible words.
FSG hat.
Yeah. Can you not though? Am I right?
No, I agree with you.
And plus on that, Gravenberg is actually a longer standing target. Yeah. That makes more sense. Decore, to me, would actually feel a little bit reactionary. And we've had to do that in this window because of what's happened with Fabinho and Henderson, of course, and what happened with the Caicedo and Lavia. Those forbidden words. You thought yours were forbidden. Forbidden words. We had to react and sort of bend and flex there. We went and got Endo because of that. I'm convinced that's why we went and got Endo, just because we needed someone through the door quickly. And within 24 hours, he was playing against Bournemouth. So it actually makes a lot of sense. But I don't think the Decore one, I'm not sure where he was on the list. Where was the Gravenberch? We know we wanted him before he moved to Bayern Munich. So, albeit he's not a six predominantly, because he's not, he's an eight. He's an eight who can actually play a little bit of 10, but has done the six. He does fit the progressive type and the multifunctional type, and the one you can add to the squad. And all of a sudden, and I think this is what it is for me, my overarching feeling on it is you're just improving your odds of having a successful season by having somebody else. Because to kind of touch on Andy's point earlier, when our best 11's out there, which you probably haven't seen yet, if truth be told, because of Canate's absence yesterday, when our best 11's out there, that best 11 can challenge in all four competitions that we're in this year. I'm certain of it. However, the minute you drop below that, the lads below it are actually okay, but there's issues with them all. Because you go to Thiago in the six, we know how injury prone he is. Stefan Bajcetic, still relatively unproven, loads of talent, bags and bags of talent. I think he's going to be brilliant, unproven. Has just been injured. And you go through and so on and so on. Curtis Jones injured, etc. Whereas if you add a Gravenberch, all of a sudden you've got this lad whose injury record's pretty good. You know, we know we've liked him for a long time. He's physical enough to come and do many different jobs for us. He's played in many different roles. You're adding this little gem of an X factor that I think can transform the way you look at your squad depth. You know when people do them squad depth charts, people love them on Twitter, you'll be well versed in these. He suddenly fits into three stroke four of those roles if you do want to add an out and out 10, which I'm not sure we ever will. But that just changes the whole complexion of it. And I think it makes so much sense to go and do that bit of business. The Decore, I'm not as sold on for all the reasons we mentioned. I think the fee is massively inflated. I think that's Palace. And, you know, credit to them, and they should do this. It's them doubling down on the fact they don't want to sell him. It's too late in the window for them to sell him. Like we are with Salah in many ways, you know what I mean? We're not selling one of our best players now. That'd be insane.
Charlie Barry from Taffy TV has just given up at 3:10. Very Everton, that was.
Oh, yeah. They do that a lot. And just to finish on it as well, the price tag for Decore is just muddied by the fact that Rice, Caicedo and Enzo Fernandez before him have all gone for crazy money. And Palace looked at that and gone, oh, you're 115. Well, we'll add 20 onto ours then. That's all it is. And again, can't blame them for it. For us, I think that left-sided centre-back that I mentioned before and a multifunctional midfielder makes us a completely different proposition this season.
Josh, I think that Liverpool are going to sign Andre after the transfer window, so January. I think that Liverpool are going to go big on Gravenberch and the centre-half. And I can see them apportioning the money accordingly for that, which might leave them quite a big sum of money for the centre-half. Mm. But I'm still not sure who the centre-half is. And also, does one of these players have to be English? Because I'm sure after the Endo signing, we've only got one, or homegrown, sorry, not English, one homegrown player slot left.
Yeah,
That is a very tough place for Liverpool to be working in right now.
Yeah, I think you're right. And if that's the case, I mean, if you're already looking at centre-halves and he's got to be left-footed, that already narrows the market massively.
And homegrown.
So you don't want to add the homegrown to that. So in my opinion, you probably get the homegrown in your midfield somewhere rather than that left-footed centre-half.
Or a young player like Gravenberch, who's still technically the under-21.
Yeah. Is he?
Interesting. Yeah, he's 21,
yeah. Okay, yeah. I mean, it's a difficult puzzle isn't it, to solve, but as I said, if you need to get one of these lads in who's homegrown, for me, you don't do that with your left-footed centre-back because there's already about five of them on the continent anyway. You know, so it's difficult enough to find them. Like, so if you're adding the homegrown thing to the mix, you've got like Levi, I always call him Leroy, Levi Colwell and nobody else really.
Mark Gahey is the other one.
Yeah, yeah.
Mark
is he left-footed?
He's a good left-footed.
Is he left-footed,
yeah? Palace, yeah.
He's just been linked to, who's he been linked to? Is it United today?
He was linked to us previously in the summer.
Yeah, I'm sure United, because they're being linked to loads of different left-backs, aren't they? And
yeah.
I think his name got through into the mix as well, to be honest.
Yeah, I think one of the frustrating things with the Decore, I think, as well, by the way, is the fact he moved 12 months ago. When we needed a midfielder, we just missed out on our top target. He goes to Palace for 18 million. Mm-hmm. The other lad who we were linked with, who was on this shortlist, apparently, Kamara, went to Villa for free. You know, it's so frustrating. Lavia went to... I mean, City probably wouldn't have sold Lavia anyway, but he went to Southampton for 14 million. We've been linked with all three of these this summer. Mm. And Caicedo, he was the only one last summer who didn't move.
And don't forget, we got offered Ronaldo. Cristiano, of course, in 2001 or something for 7 million, and Rafa didn't fancy him. So if we're going to go back there. No, it is right, though. We've scouted all these players. That's the annoying thing.
We hesitated last summer, and we're getting punished for it now.
But, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, when we were maybe on the periphery of top four, or in the top four, and getting the Champions League every season and trying to go up to Challenge City, we were signing these players, we were getting in before they made the stepping stone and before they became the sort of 60, 70, 80 million pound players. We, you know, we took the gamble and the Robertsons and the Wijnaldums, and maybe Shaqiri didn't work out quite as well, but or Minamino, but you took the gambles and, you know, you got them just before they were about to explode. Whereas it feels like now, because we have been challenging City at times in previous seasons, that we feel like we need to sign the finished article or close to the finished article. And, you know, we know that FSG, and we know that the owners and the people in the transfer committee, they want that perfect transfer. They want, like, McAllister's 35 million is a perfect transfer for them. Mm-hmm. Soboslai, maybe a little bit more money than they would have liked to have paid, but perfect transfer, it's not that much. And, you know, the problem is, you know, this, whoever we get in at this point is not going to be perfect. They're either going to have to pay over the odds for what they need, or they're not going to quite get the finished article. But, you know, the reason, like, the likes of the Andre one excites me is because, you know, you could be getting the Caicedo before Caicedo's made the move to Brighton, you know, for like four or five million before he becomes the 110 million player. That's what we need to do. That's what, like, you know, for example, I think we're offered Enzo Fernandez as well. But you're obviously taking a risk on them coming out of South America. They might need a bit of time to gel, or maybe we can't give them the minutes. I'm not quite sure the way around it, but I would like to see us more shopping in that sort of market and taking a couple more risks rather than going for, you know, someone who, you know, is going to be sort of maybe 6 or 7 out of 10, but maybe like an Endo. But, you know, get someone in, nurture them, and they could be that 9, 10 out of 10 player. Yeah.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Josh, I've got a super chat here from Neil O'Callaghan. I'm going to come to you on a point. So it's poor planning. A game by management similar to last year. We're left short where we play catch up to everyone else. We have the smaller squad and we have not addressed this. FSG's policies to blame. I think we've talked about quite a bit of that. But one of the things that I think I want your take on, Josh, is that, like, you know, we all know that Michael Edwards left the football club. We all know that Julian Ward left the football club. We all know that Ian Graham, who was the head of, what was his actual title?
Director of Research.
We know Will Spearman stepped up into that role at Liverpool now. Are these guys being listened to, and is it harder to do what Andy has said if you don't have the strong data team to lean into?
It's really difficult to know from the outside. Like, there's been question marks over, like, why Ian Graham and Edwards left both handing in resignation at the same time, essentially. And I think that one, personally, was just they've done the job and they've been there for 10 years, completed the game, and now they're getting off and they want something new, or they want a break or whatever. I don't think there's too much in that, but I do think since then, since they left, David Woodvine's also left, Julian Ward's left, that was kind of FSG's edge. That was the edge that we had in the market. It was never financial for Liverpool. It was always the expertise, the nous, the smartness, being a step ahead, head of the curve and all that stuff. The people who were part of that team, it's now kind of been disbanded a lot, really, and it's now just kind of Klopp, Linders. Spearman's a great replacement for Graham, to be fair. But it feels very Klopp and Linders and now Klopp's mate in George Schmadke. I don't think that's that controversial to say that either, because I think it's pretty obvious. I think one of the interesting comments that Linders made recently, actually, I don't know if he said it in a press conference or in his book or something, but he defined Liverpool's recruitment approach as the academy and game changers. That was how he defined it. And it was never that, you know. It was never previously that. When we had this team of, like, Edwards and all this, that was never the approach. I don't know where that's come in. As in, like, you know, we get these players from the academy and we go and sign Jude Bellingham and there's no one in between. That's a sudden change. And so it does feel like Liverpool's recruitment approach has changed a little bit in the past couple of seasons through these people leaving and Klopp gaining power and Linders gaining a bit of power. And I don't think it's been a case of, like, you know, Klopp and Linders grabbing the keys and literally saying, you know, we're in charge now or anything like that. I think it's just been more of a natural shift, as in, like, this is just kind of the way it's gone now because of the power that Klopp's got, similar to Ferguson when he was at United and that. Mm. But whether it's for the better, it's difficult to say now, because we just don't really know what the product is like at the minute of this new setup. We saw a bit of that, I think, with the Caicedo-Lavia fallout. And I think if we've got a well-oiled operation behind the scenes where everything is in place and that, I'm not sure we end up doing what we did, where we look a bit mad, bidding for Lavia three times, not getting him, bidding for Caicedo 100 and odd million without agreeing personal terms and not getting him either. Then we go and get a lad who's 30 and has never played out of Germany in Europe. So, yeah, that's my assessment of the whole thing. It's difficult to determine how good we are at the minute because a lot's changed recruitment-wise.
Listen, I've got no problem with Klopp and Linders and Schmacher doing the deals and stuff, but I think for the long-term future of Liverpool, the system that we had in place better protected us when Klopp, for want of a better term, hangs up his boots.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's the difficulty of it. Like, that's the difficulty of leaning on this almighty figure who, to be fair, Klopp is in Liverpool. I mean, he literally has the keys to the city now. You know, he's that kind of figure and he's delivered the Premier League to Anfield for the first time in 30 years. So I can totally understand why FSG have potentially got to a point where it's like, Jürgen, just solve it, mate. You know, you do it. But he benefited initially at the start from having support around him. And if we're going to hope to continue to compete at the highest level when he leaves, it'd be good to have that kind of Brighton structure in place where no matter who's poached, they are just replaced as another body and that the whole kind of organisation keeps going as it was going anyway, regardless of who leaves. But we are leaning more and more on Klopp and it's worrying in terms of, like, when he does depart, does it just crumble and we have to start again from scratch?
Yeah. They do get some things right as well. You know, Linders and Klopp in terms of the players they're targeting. Like, I know Gakpo is very much a Linders signing. I think you'll know probably Dan better than me, but I'm pretty sure he came and he said that's the one he wanted. Yeah. And, you know, these two are intelligent men. You know, they can identify a good player when they see one. What I suspect they don't have the time to do is sit and watch every single game across Europe's top five leagues and the South American leagues and this, that and the other. And, you know, reading Pep Linders' book as well, I remember they said when Nunez came to Anfield, they just said, you know, if we go for a striker, we go for him. That was what Klopp said to Linders, so they do seem to have that power. And we know that from, like, previous things, you know, Salah wasn't necessarily first choice. There were a couple of others, I think we tried to sign Götze before. I think
that was Salah. Maybe
Matt, Salah before, and Julian Brandt.
And Brandt, before Mane. I don't think Mane was first choice either. So, you know, that team they had behind them was so good. It was the best in the business, and it had to be the best in the business because we can't spend the money that state owned clubs are spending. I think we should be spending more. Don't get me wrong, this isn't me defending the owners in any way, shape or form. I don't think we do enough, but we know we can't do that, so we do need to be able to be the best at identifying who's that player who's just about to explode, who you can get in for sort of 30, 40, 50 million and they become an £100 million player, which we've been the experts of over the last 10 years. But my concern is just the identification of these players. Now, it has the brain drain of the geeks behind the scenes, for want of a better word. Is that gone now? Are we as good as identifying those players? And if we're not, then it will just become a game of money where City are spending twice the and you know, Newcastle and Chelsea are spending twice the money that you're spending, and they're getting twice the player, because without that leveller, I think we're in a bit of trouble.
Tough. I've got a question for you, really tough question here for you from Super Chat from Aaron Garza. Dan, sorry for being an absolute shithouse on this one.
Can't wait.
It's coming straight to you. Depending on how the rest of the window goes, when would it be okay to say FSG is cheap rather than smart in the market?
Why did I know you were going to say that? I think this time next week, to be honest. I really do.
I think it's okay to say they're cheap now.
Well, no, because I like to reserve judgment while the window's still open, personally. Because if we sign the midfielder and the left-sided centre-back that I think we need and the ones I want us to sign between now and Friday's deadline, then I'd be stupid to sit here and say we've got it wrong. I think if we don't get those two players in, we will have left ourselves short, to sort of talk about what I went on about earlier, in terms of I think we just improve our odds of having a successful season massively by signing those two players. At the minute, it's a huge gamble, and it's gambles that we've took before. Obviously, the COVID season, we lost all our centre-halves, and last season when we were short on midfielders, we've taken those gambles, they've backfired dramatically and they haven't worked. We can't do it again, in my opinion. We can't take another gamble and leave our squad short on numbers, quality, whatever else. If we're sat here this time next week, it will be a really disappointing window. And FSG will have underinvested in us. They won't give us enough money. But the problem with that is, and it's eating away at the back of my mind, is they clearly felt like Caicedo was worth the money. And he was the answer, wasn't it? I don't know how much of a red herring that is, I will say, because that 111 million, I've had it said to me before that they were willing to spend that because it was Caicedo.
Yeah.
There's not necessarily that money in the budget, and we're not going to see us spend that. We should do, in my opinion, because that money clearly exists somewhere, because we were willing to spend it on a lad from Brighton. So some people will see that now as the benchmark. I think we're going to in a minute, so I won't go too much into detail, but some people see that as we have to spend that money. I'm not entirely sure that's the case, but we do have money to spend. And therefore, if it's Klopp or if it's Schmadke or whoever else sort of looking at the rest of the market and saying, don't want him because of X reasons, or almost like we can't get him out of there because they don't want to sell him, whatever, then you'd understand that. But I honestly believe, and I'm not one to say this sort of thing very often, but I think if we're sat here next week and we haven't been able to sign another footballer, then huge questions will have to be asked about what exactly we're doing, whether it be from the top or whether it be from the likes of Klopp, Schmadke and Linders, because something's gone wrong there. Because whoever's seen our situation and seen our squad and gone, that's fine, they're wrong. They'd be absolutely wrong. And I just want to touch on something Josh said earlier, and he's right. Because Jurgen Klopp always heralded the fact that he had the best in class around him. He lauded Michael Edwards for his role in the success and stuff like that. And Julian Ward when he was out at the time as well, in terms of them two as a partnership. Not necessarily Julian Ward's tenure as a solo, because that didn't really happen, did it, to be honest. But I wonder now, does Klopp want all this power? Like, does he want to be the guy making all the decisions? Because he was so enamoured with the fact that he had all these brilliant people around him, the best in class, making all these decisions. And they were working as a team to get things right. He almost reluctantly took some of the praise, but now all of a sudden it's like, oh, go on, Jurgen, you sort it. It feels mad to me.
I've got a theory on this. It might be complete bullshit and whatever, but like, if you have the best in class and they leave and then it's not best in class, you might do something about it. So what I mean by that is, if you've worked with Julian Ward for a few years, but he's never been the guy, and you've worked with Ian Graham for years, but then the next guy steps up and he's not best in class because he's not Ian Graham, and Julian Ward's not best in class because he's not Michael Edwards, you might then go, actually, I'm not working with the best in class anymore. It's not an easy thing to talk about this stuff, but he might just think they're not as good.
Yeah, possibly, but I don't know. I think we have to get back to, again, to rip off what the lads are saying, we have to get back to being that way about it and sort of getting our behind-the-scenes recruitment in place, because Brighton are the absolute perfect example of this. They've lost countless footballers in recent times, including one they've just done. Obviously, the result at the weekend didn't go to plan, but they're going to be no worse off losing Caicedo, it looks like. They're just going to go again.
And same as when they lost Bissouma.
And more to the point, in my opinion, this is kind of the more poignant point when it comes to us and Klopp and stuff. When they lost Graham Potter, it didn't matter.
Yeah,
they had the management set up to go and get
Deserving. The thing is, when Liverpool started to lose these key figures, that was the narrative that came out. That was the line that, like, the Liverpool beat was given. As in, like, it doesn't matter, you know, even if Klopp leaves or whatever, the big thing is that the infrastructure is in place. That was the line, and that's no longer there. Yes. That's no longer there. A lot of the people have left, so they can't now push that line. So is there now an expectation, is there now an onus on FSG to rebuild that? Or is this new Liverpool Reloaded that Klopp's referenced a completely different structure, not only on the pitch, but off the pitch as well and behind the scenes? Like, going back to the FSG stuff, like, one of the things I've always found frustrating is, and I'll probably get pelters for this, but there's always been this narrative that Klopp is locked away in a bathroom crying his eyes out because FSG won't fund him. And for a lot of it, right, that might be the case, but I also think you can throw in there, there's been a lot of transfer decisions that have been footballing decisions inside the Liverpool recruitment room. And who's determining whether we should or shouldn't move? Like, say, for example, last summer when we didn't get Tchouaméni, that seemed like a Klopp decision to keep Milner, give Milner a new contract. We go and get Nunes instead, or dedicate the money there or whatever. We can go again with the midfield because I like Henderson, I like Milner, I want them to stay around. And that felt to me like a footballing decision. Even though we bid whatever it was, 60 million for Tchouaméni or whatever, we just kind of kept hold of that. Same with Bellingham. We had the money there for Bellingham, didn't get him. We still apparently got that there by the looks of it. We've just tried to bid 100 not for Casado. So I'm not saying the owners are funding Liverpool to an acceptable level by any means, because I do think they need to put more in. But in terms of every footballing decision, every transfer decision, I just wonder how much of it is FSG not covering up the dough? How much of it is a footballing decision inside the room, where Klopp's like, no, we need to keep a path open for Bezetic, or, you know, no, we need to let... Because people were calling for, like, a right-back, for example, when Trent was still 18. You know, people were still calling for a striker when Firmino was still getting to grips with the nine shirt because he's not a proper goal scorer and all that. So I just wonder over the years how much, and especially now, how much of it's a footballing decision, how much of it is we can't afford them.
I think it's a strategy that possibly just doesn't work when there's state-owned clubs running around with an unlimited pot of money. You know, our strategy beforehand worked well, but now you're at the point where if we're going to improve, we do need to buy ready-made players. And, you know, they feel like they, rightly or wrongly, they feel like they can't do the Robertsons, the Wijnaldums, and those players that you're taking a little bit of a gamble on, but hopefully they're about to explode. You know, I sort of think they don't really know what they are. Are we the Brighton who get those players in, or, you know, are we the Man City who only buy in proven players? The problem is, if you buy the proven players, you have to, more or less most of the time, unless you get a glory deal like McAllister, you have to cough up the money for it. And on the 111 million, I don't think they have to go out and spend every penny of that 111 million because it's there. But what I do think it now removes their right to say to Jurgen Klopp is, you know, say Jurgen does want Doucouré and they value him at 60 million and Palace say 80. I don't think you can leave a short then. I think you have to suck it up because the strategy's just been so wrong.
My thing with the 111 million thing is, and with Liverpool's strategy all summer long, and I've said this on various shows, is they've got it wrong whether they sign the players in the next week or not for me. And I think that's right. Pertinent is you can buy the centre half and you can buy the DM now or another midfielder. You should have done it fucking 2 months ago. You have not given Liverpool the best foundation for success this season. And listen, it might be FSG, it might be the footballing people. I'm not trying to pin it on anybody. Liverpool, all-encompassing Liverpool, have got it wrong because they didn't sign the players to give Klopp on the 1st of July when they go back into training. That's what the problem was last summer. We didn't get the players in that we needed to get in. We're repeating the mistakes this summer. That is really hard to get over as far as I'm concerned. And I'm like you, I don't think it is particularly easy to run a buy to sell, a sell to buy model when you've stopped selling players. I don't think you can fucking do it. You've got to sell your Mo Salahs for 150 million quid. You've got to sell your Fabinhos for 40 million quid when the offer comes in, whether it's high enough or it's not high enough. But you can't let it disrupt your season. And that's what Liverpool have done this year for me. And, you know, we might try into absolute world beaters and I look like a tit, but it still wouldn't have been the best foundations for success, as far as I'm concerned. And my laptop's about to die here because we've waffled on for so long. So I'm just going to quickly talk about Piero Hincapié, because there seems to be a lot of talk about the Leverkusen centre-half now. Dan, is this a signing that you think that Liverpool should move for?
In terms of profile, yes, 100%. I'm not going to sit here and profess to know everything about the lad, but I've had some decent conversations about, I spoke to Kevin Hatchard about him last week, and he was a big fan, actually. He said he'd get all the usual sort of weaknesses and flaws that you get with a young defender. You know, he's only 21. He's played a decent amount of footy for somebody so young. But what
is... so he'd fit into the non-home ground as well.
Yeah, he's actually got 27 Ecuador caps, which is fascinating to me at that age. But what was interesting, most interesting about him is the fact that obviously he's by Leverkusen, Xavi Alonso, but he's played almost a 50-50 split of left-back and centre-back. And that, to me, is probably the most appealing thing. Like, the minute I seen that, I was like, okay, where does he sign? But in terms of his ability and in terms of what he offers, he was actually quite complimentary. He said he's good on the ball. He can offer that sort of thing. He's not an Andy Robertson, which I actually think is a bonus for what we're looking for, quite frankly. He's a bit more simplistic in what he tries to do with a footy. He's aggressive in the tackle. He'll go and win balls. He's quite physical, quite dominant. He's very athletic. So, in terms of profile, yes, he ticks a lot of boxes. What I didn't like so much from the conversations I had over the weekend was the fact that Leverkusen got like 70 million euros for him. That was a little bit eye-opening. But that, again, and it kind of referenced what you were talking about a second ago in terms of leaving it too late. It's because it's so late in the window. Yep. Leverkusen and Xavi Alonso have made plans, Europa League plans, to have him part of their team. So us going knocking on doors now, we're going to get teams turning around and adding money onto it, because that's where we're at.